The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger as we bring you the 2009 NFL and college football season in style. We've got you covered with game insight, opinion, and football expertise. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter.
There is no bigger honor than to go into the professional Hall of Fame or college Hall of Fame.
Each week, the Big E Sports Show will take you under the helmet to bring you the latest talk on the 2009 season of college and pro football.
Is there maximum effort out there? Because that's one thing you don't have to be talented at. You don't need talent to try hard. And that's the thing that I'm looking for out of them this year.
Under the Helmet with Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Elissa Walker-Campbell, we are back this weekend on the Big E Sports Show as we are gearing up. It's underway, the NBA All-Star Weekend. A lot of festivities. It's a lot of fun here in the Metroplex. Our first segment, we were hooping it up with Bay Forest, former Phoenix Suns. Now it is time to recap Super Bowl 44 and the Saints' big win. Who knew? And we also are going to take time in our next segment with Jason Peter. We're going to talk about the 2010 Hall of Fame class. And as always, it's such a pleasure to have you on the program. I can't think of a better person to recap that Super Bowl. It's amazing. The Saints were a 5-point underdog going into that game, and here they prevailed and ended up winning 31-17.
Yeah, if I wasn't a married man now and a father, I think I might have booked a plane ticket down to New Orleans to take part in Mardi Gras this year, because I think it is probably going to be one of the wildest weeks or a month, however long it lasts, probably in the history of the event. The Saints, you couldn't, I guess, ask for a more deserving city to be crowned Super Bowl champs and everything that they've been through. We talked about that last week with Katrina and the devastation that caused. And I was wrong. I thought Indianapolis was going to win, but New Orleans just did a tremendous job. And Drew Brees, obviously the MVP, and most of the attention, I think, when you talk about the Saints, goes to that offense. But I think the area where they ended up winning that game was with what they were doing on defense. And obviously the big play on special teams starts the second half that I'm sure 80 or 90% of America probably missed, because they were still at the refrigerator refilling their beverage or grabbing some chips. And before you know it, New Orleans had the ball back. So a gutsy move on Sean Payton's part, but they did everything right. And Peyton Manning just never got comfortable.
Well, you highlight a number of things, of course, talking about the hero, you know, and Drew Brees. Defensively, the Saints were so sound. But I think you nailed it, Jason. Just, I think, such a remarkable job in terms of coaching the Saints. Coach Sean Payton, just a great job of execution. And then, you know, that onside kick to start the second half, that certainly set the stage to beat the Colts.
Yeah, defensively, they just continued to mix it up. And that's the thing. I think when most defenses or defense coordinators, when they play against Peyton, they kind of have one thing in mind that they want to do. And the trouble is, when you play against a basically an offensive coordinator in Peyton Manning, he can go out and it may take a series or two or three series, but eventually he figures out exactly what that defense is doing, and he adjusts the offense accordingly, and usually it results in a lot of success, except New Orleans just never gave him the same look twice. They just constantly changed it up, and they were really lost. I mean, there were a few plays, certainly, that I think would have changed maybe the course of the game. I think the huge play that really hurt them was the pass to Pierre Garçon before the first half was over, and he dropped the ball. He was wide open. He could have run for another 30, 40 yards, but it gave the ball back to New Orleans, and they were able to capitalize on it. And, you can pinpoint a few plays throughout the course of the game, but the truth is it never comes down to just a few plays. I know a lot of coaches will say that, but it's the entire package. It's not just one. It's all the plays. They all add up, and certainly some plays were bigger than others. You got to tip your hat to the Saints. Like I said, to start it off, they never let Peyton get into that rhythm. I know Bill Polian, the GM of the Indianapolis Colts, has come out, and he's actually pointed the finger. He said, you know, the offensive line didn't play well enough, and special teams didn't play well enough. And, that's true, I'm sure, but it's an entire team effort. It's a domino effect, and when one area doesn't play well, there's going to be another area that kind of feels the ripple effect, and it's an entire team effort, and they just didn't have enough against the Saints.
You're listening to the voice of Jason Peter. It is our weekly Under the Helmet segment. Jason always doing a great job of dissecting, breaking it all down. Here just a moment ago, you talked about what a tremendous comeback for the city, the road that they have traveled. I mean, 4 years ago, could we have ever really thought that not only would they get to the biggest stage, but they would win? The point I want to ask you about is, here we highlight the Saints coach in Sean Payton. I mean, for a rookie coach, for him to come in and to be able to put it all together, and as you said, it wasn't one particular area, it was just the full package, and to bring it really says a lot about what he's been able to accomplish.
Yeah, and he coached that game they weren't satisfied with just being there. And I think a lot of people maybe projected that would be the mindset that New Orleans, with everything that they've been through and being in that underdog role, that you were going to have a bunch of guys that were just happy to be there. Indianapolis, having won a Super Bowl a couple of years, having the best player, arguably the best player in the NFL, and that's a whole other topic as far as the heat that Peyton Manning's taken since the game's been over, and now people are questioning whether or not he should be considered one of the greats. I think it's comical. It truly is. But New Orleans just was not satisfied with being there, and Sean Payton coached that game to win. Talk about one of the all-time gutsiest calls to come out and start the second half with that onside kick. I mean, that play just kind of signified, I think, exactly the mindset of New Orleans, that we were not happy with just playing in the Super Bowl. We were going out to win the Super Bowl. We weren't playing just to keep the score close. We were trying to put as many points up on the board as possible. And that's the way the Super Bowl should be played. You should have two great teams that are just battling it out, that neither one is just happy to be there. And with New Orleans, they just made more big plays than Indianapolis did.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, certainly two great teams that are there, but really the pressure, it was on the Colts, and I don't know if you watched in the warm-ups. It just seemed like the Saints, they were just, they were going to bring it, but they just seemed a whole lot more relaxed, and their mindset was, the pressure's not on us. It's on the Colts because everyone's anticipating that they're going to win.
Yeah, and you heard a lot about the preparation and the differences, I think, between the way Jim Caldwell did it and the way that Sean Payton did. And with Jim Caldwell, it was very much, we're here to play a football game. You don't have to be out at night. You don't have to take part in, some of the things that go along with a Super Bowl. There's opportunities for guys to make money with autograph signings and different appearances. And with Indianapolis, they were very much saying, look it, guys, that stuff doesn't mean anything. It's irrelevant. And, the extra cash that you'll make doing those appearances is nothing compared to winning the Super Bowl and being able to wear that ring for the rest of your life and to call yourself a Super Bowl champion. So it was very much all business, no play. And with New Orleans, you kind of heard about Sean Payton telling his guys, look, go out, enjoy this. This is an experience. I want you to experience all the Super Bowl has to offer. So go out, do some stuff. Remember, though, we're still here to play a football game, and we're here to play the biggest football game of the year, but I don't want you guys to be these machines. I don't want you guys to be these robots. Go out and, NFL teams, there are teams that have never won Super Bowls and have been in the NFL for years and years and years. And I think for these players, you know, some of them may never get back to the Super Bowl again. So he was, I think, very much under the mindset saying, go soak it all in. Go experience everything the NFL has to offer and be relaxed. It's just like any other game. Sure, it's the biggest game, but that's the mindset that most coaches take. Whatever game is next is the biggest game of the year, and that's true. And when you talk about the Super Bowl, it is just another game, and I think you do have to approach it like that. You have to take the same approach that you took to get to the Super Bowl that you do with the Super Bowl. So two different philosophies for sure, and you know, one obviously now since the Saints have won, turns out that the philosophy that that Sean Payton took was the right one.
Jason Peter with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. I did want to get your impressions of a Super Bowl MVP, Drew Brees. I mean, just who is this guy? He's so composed. He gives great sound bites. He's like a Jason Peter on air, but just a wonderful family man, very dedicated, and obviously, you know, played the biggest game of his life. I mean, 32 of 39 for 288 yards, zero interceptions, two touchdowns, and he connected on 82% of his passes.
Yeah, with watching the game with my wife and some of the pregame interviews, and they took an opportunity for everybody to get to meet Drew Brees and his wife. And when they left San Diego, and you know, there were a couple other teams that were interested in Miami, I think being one of them, but they had some concerns about the surgery that he had just had on his shoulder. And he said New Orleans didn't have any concerns. He said that Sean Payton said, you're our guy. We want you to be the quarterback of this franchise. And he said it was just a different feeling that he got between New Orleans and everybody else. And he said when he got down there, he just emerged himself, his entire family, you know, they just emerged themselves in New Orleans. He says they want this place to call home. He didn't sign a contract with New Orleans and then go live outside of town. You know, he bought a house right in the middle of everything, and he said, look, we're here to stay, and this is what we want to do. And you know, with the charities and the people that he's helped, I mean, it was hard not to root for him. And for a guy who, you know, knows Peyton Manning and you know, our paths have crossed, we've played against each other, we've spent time off the field together, you know, he certainly was a guy that I was pulling for. It was hard after watching some of those interviews with Drew Brees to sit there and not pull for him too, because him and his wife, they seem like such good people. And, you know, he's the kind of teammate that you want. He's the type of guy you want on your side. And it's not that he's just a great football player. He really comes across as a great person.
Jason Peter is right. Drew Brees does the improbable and upsets the Colts and Peyton Manning. Talk a little bit about Peyton Manning. People were very critical of him that he didn't shake hands after the Super Bowl game. I mean, do you think he was just trying to get out of the way and not steal the spotlight at all from Drew Brees and just give him his time? I mean, what was your take on that?
Yeah, I noticed that as soon as the final seconds had ticked off and he just kind of beelined it straight to the locker room, and I was thinking, oh, flashbacks to LeBron walking off the court after the final seconds had ticked off in the finals. And you know, I think he does certainly deserve some criticism for that. I mean, if people were willing to go after LeBron for it, I think you got to be able to go after Peyton too. You know, I think he probably would maybe do it a different way if he could go back. You know, I'm sure emotions are running high. I was never able to play in a Super Bowl, but national championship games, fortunately, we won all of them. But you know, with playing in a game of that magnitude, I think your hopes are so much for coming out on the victorious end that when it's all over and you just realize the opportunity and the chance that just slipped through your fingers. Sometimes maybe you're not thinking, let me go over and find some of these other guys. It's hard for me to say exactly what was going through because, like I said, I've never played in one of those games. But you would think your first instinct would be to walk over to find Drew Brees. I mean, that's usually one of the more recognized handshakes, I think, in all of sports, is the two quarterbacks finding one another after the game and congratulating, the winner. And he passed on that. And people certainly are going to notice when it's Peyton Manning walking off the field. And I think the criticism that he gets for it is probably deserved.
Well, and you also think as he's going off the field, what is his mindset? Is he replaying, the mistakes or, what he could have done differently? I mean, are you totally in a zone? I know that you said that, you never played in the Super Bowl, but, truly, what is that like?
Yeah, I just think when you play any sport and with, a game, a final game at the end, I mean, the entire season is playing, preparing for that game. I mean, all 32 teams have the same goal in mind when they report for training camp every July, August.
Absolutely.
Is we're going to win. We're playing this season to win the Super Bowl. Teams don't play to go 8-8. They don't play to go 13-3 or 15-1 and then lose in the Super Bowl. They play to win all their games. And with Peyton, that's the mindset that he's taken since the first snap he's taken in the NFL, is that we're going to win Super Bowls every single year, and if we don't, we're at least going to try like heck to win them. And it's a tough situation, and I could only imagine the letdown and the disappointment when that final second ticks off, because even with 4 or 5 minutes left and they're still down, there's still hope. And I'm sure I was still one of the guys that thought, just give Peyton the ball, just let him get another opportunity, and he'll get Indianapolis in the end zone. And they're still going to find a way to win this game. And before you know it, 4 minutes is down to two, and two is down to one, and then there's no time left on the clock. And now you have nothing but to think back to, oh, what about this play or what about that play, and I should have done this and I should have done that. And knowing the type of competitor that Peyton is, I'm sure those regrets and the what-ifs started, before that final second even ticked off the clock.
Jason Peter is joining us on the Western Company of Texas phone line. We do want to pause and direct you to our radio website. That is eradiosports.com. You can email us at info@eradiosports.com. Join us on Twitter @eradiosports. You've been tweeting these days, Jason. I haven't checked out your tweets.
I haven't been there.
Come on now.
Too much. I'm trying to get back into the swing of things. But I need to get back on and start communicating with the people.
Absolutely. There's one thing about Jason Peter. He always brings it strong. He always got some good statements on there. So we'll look forward to those. Now, one more quick thought I got to talk about as far as Super Bowl 44. Garrett Hartley, here's a guy that played at the University of Oklahoma, a Big 12 product. He is actually from the great state of Texas and certainly did a fantastic job coming in at times and making key plays.
Yeah, he was. Money.
Money,
the
there you go.
I mean, there's nothing else to say. He did a tremendous job, and it's an entire team effort. And when you're talking about winning Super Bowls, you're going to need a great effort from every single guy on the roster, from the kicker to the quarterback to the running back to the guy that recovers the onside kick. I mean, you need maximum effort from everybody, and he was just a piece of the puzzle.
Okay, well, let's move forward. Let's talk about 2010, the Hall of Fame class, of course. Did you watch the NFL Network and Emmitt Smith and a lot of emotion, a lot of tears, listening to him, what that meant to be going in the month of August? Your thoughts on the inductees?
Yeah, I could only imagine. I mean, when I went in to the NFL, and when I first was drafted, that was a goal of mine. In fact, I just spoke to a high school, and talking about the addiction and my whole, you know, issues with battling substance abuse and maybe some of the reasons behind it, the driving forces, and maybe why I turned to some of those things. And, you know, I said one of the things that I was dealing with was my NFL career not living up to my expectations. And I said when I first went into the NFL, I said one of my goals was that in 10, 12 years, however long it was going to be, I was going to go into the NFL Hall of Fame. That was something that I wanted. I figured the success that I had in college will just translate right over into the NFL and continue to have success, and one day I'll be rewarded with being inducted into the Hall of Fame. So I'm not the only guy who thinks like that. So when you have guys where that's a goal and it's one of the first goals you set as far as, you know, an individual goal. Obviously, the team goals, I think, are the priority, and winning the Super Bowls and playing for championships. But when it comes down to an individual level, I think for the NFL, that is something that a lot of guys put number one or number two on that goal sheet. And for Emmitt, you know, to be able to have the type of career that he had, and the success that he had, and then finally you get the nod. And I shouldn't say finally, it's not like he had to wait that long to get in. It wasn't the same as, say, Floyd Little going in, but Emmitt getting that nod to be recognized as one of the greatest players to play in the National Football League, you could understand why the emotions were pouring out of him.
And certainly so significant, of course, Emmitt Smith, Jerry Rice. But I have to ask you, listening to you kind of recount that was a dream, a goal of yours to be able to be a part of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. How do you come to a place of peace that, you know, that dream didn't come into fruition, but that, you know, you were a very successful college athlete, though, too?
Yeah, and I think that, was really one of the major battles that I had, was accepting that that wasn't going to happen. And even, you know, 3 years into my career and finishing, seasons on the IR, there was still a voice inside of me that said, you're still going to get your body fixed and you're still going to be able to reach all the dreams and goals that you have set forth. And, with the Hall of Fame being one of them, I fought that way for my entire career as a player in the NFL, that I'll get my body fixed and I'll still make my way to Canton. And it never happened. And, certainly a lot of my goals didn't happen when you only play 4 years. It just didn't kind of follow through as I had thought. But for me, I think being able to say that I was still a successful football player, I still, just with the success that I had in college, 99% of the athletes out there would look at that and say, man, that's a successful career to be able to be an All-American and to win 3 national championships and to be a captain of your team. I mean, these are all great, positive things, and I think instead of dwelling on things that didn't happen, I was able to take a step back and say, look at all the good things that did happen. And certainly my NFL career just it didn't add up to what I had planned. But even with that, I mean, 99% of the athletes would love to play 4 years in the NFL and would love to be a first-round draft pick and, would love to be a starter on an NFL team, and I was still able to do all of those things.
And, of course, you can read all about Jason's stories and Hero of the Underground. It was a New York Times bestseller. You can go to jasonpeter.com. Jason mentioned he's a 3-time national champion at the University of Nebraska. It's interesting, as you were talking, that you had an opportunity earlier in the week to talk to some high school in North Carolina, talk to some students, some kids out there. Is it hard for you to continually to talk about maybe perhaps some of the mistakes that you have made in the past, because you are a new man, you're the family man, your life has changed so dramatically. Do you feel that it is your responsibility that you have to help educate these kids to be able to make good choices, or do you ever get tired of talking about it?
No, I don't. And, you know, the reason that I wanted to initially write the book was because I thought I had an experience that I was able to live through that maybe somebody else could benefit from, that maybe there was another kid who is in high school or in college, and maybe he'll read the book and say, wow, there's some similarities there, and maybe he ends up making some decisions that work out for the best, and maybe it was because he had read the book and it affected him in a positive way. And I think when I hear kind of stories about that and people who have reached out to me to say that, you know, the book has really helped me and changed, you know, the way that I do things, or, you know, it helped me recognize maybe some of the problems I was having in my life. And when I get an opportunity to go out and speak to different groups, it's almost therapeutic in a way. You know, a lot of people, when they think about recovery and overcoming addiction or alcoholism, a lot of people sometimes they think, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous and the AA way. And, you know, I don't do the AA way, but, you know, there are some similarities in, you know, being in a room and talking to other people about your problems. Well, the way that I look at my situation is every time I go out and I speak to a group of kids or a group of people, that's, in a way, kind of my meeting. That's me getting, I think, my experiences out in the open and talking about them. And, you know, it's certainly beneficial for me, and I hope it's beneficial for the people that are listening.
Well, I hope when you're on our program every week, it's kind of cathartic for you too there, JP.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. I mean, talking about it, and, you know, for me, a guy who kind of grew up pretty much an introvert and keeping his feelings to himself and kind of a loner, so to speak, you know, it is therapeutic, I think, for me to get up and talk about those things.
Okay. Well, Jason, glad we can be of help, and we certainly look forward to talking to you next week. Perhaps we'll do a little recap on the NBA All-Star Weekend. It's a big weekend here, so it's snowing, and my producer's like yelling at me. I've got to cut us off, but we'll look forward to catching up with you next week, Jason.
Definitely, and then we can hit on Lane Kiffin recruiting 11-year-olds by then, right?
Absolutely. That's like a 2-week series we'll do it on, Jason.
That's right.
Okay, Mr. Peterbilt, we'll catch up with you next week. Thanks so much for stopping by. Stick around. We got much more straight ahead this weekend on the Big E Sports Show, and join us online at eradiosports.com.